This talk is about combating outliers in MapReduce clusters. It began quite modestly as a measurement study. We were just trying to look for performance problems. But very quickly, we found several of them. We fixed them. And I'm excited to, to tell you that this is in production now, and it's running live on all clusters, or all of Bing's clusters. This is joint work with Ganesh from Berkeley and Ion Stoica, Albert Greenberg and Yi Lu from MSR, Vikas Saha and Ed, who are in the Microsoft's MapReduce team. As you all know, MapReduce has become the de facto way of doing a lot of work in parallel. It's used to support queries on large data sets, such as building the search index and using and mining millions of click logs to improve search and place better ads. The secret is that MapReduce seems to decouple the operations on data. Users can write their own code. There are a few templates, map, reduce, combine, from the mechanisms that allow these operations to run in parallel on large data. It's widely used, and it represents heavy investment. Our version's called Cosmos. It's based on Dryad, and there are many other open source versions as well. Let's begin with an example. Suppose you wanted to find the frequent search queries. Here's what a user would do in Scope, the language front end to Bing. From a query table, select the name of the query, count the occurrences, and prune by those above a certain threshold. Underneath the covers, however, things are very different. The query table is a set of shards that are randomly distributed on a file system. The work is done in parallel by many tasks that are administered by a single job manager. Implicitly, read tasks know how to process the block and generate a record, in this case containing the name. Maps process these records and partition them, again in this case based on the name. With each partition is a reduce task that looks at all names in that partition, either counts up the frequency and prunes by threshold. Why am I telling you all of this? Here's a sample run for a job that looks like this in production. On the x-axis is time. I'm showing you the first half of the job. And the y-axis is the number of running tasks in each map and reduce phase. You see that the reads and the maps start in quick succession of each other, but then maps are stuck, waiting for some of the read tasks to get done and slots to free up. You see that the reduce does not even start until the last map finishes, because in this case, reduce was not parallelizable with the map. Reduce is coming up to a complete standstill here. Turns out some of the maps data became unavailable, and all reduces kind of came stopped until the data get regenerated. You see, most of the reduces finish, but the stragglers kind of keep the reduce phase from going on for further ahead. The takeaway is that outliers slow down MapReduce jobs. Note that this is despite having a mitigation strategy that duplicates tasks that run at the end of a phase. Ideally, what would you want? You want to get rid of the stragglers. You want to get rid of these recomputes and do so recursively to pack the phases up close to each other. Just eyeballing, you're getting a performance improvement of 50%. Stepping back, by tackling outliers, if you speed up the jobs, numerous HCI studies show that you can improve programmer productivity. A more subtle impact is that outliers on one job don't look like the impact of outliers on a different job. So just getting rid of them makes your job execution more predictable. You're easier to give SLAs out. And all of this is money. Every resource that you can save or do other work with is a value add. In this talk, I'm going to present some measurement results from a large production cluster that identifies a variety of outlier causes. I'll present a mitigation scheme that takes cost-specific action and accounts for resources. I'll also show you results from our live deployment. We begin with characterizing the outliers that happen in our network. Over a year, we extract start and end times of jobs and tasks, the data that they read, and their failure or no-fail status. We also get dependencies between these tasks. The first result I'm going to show you is the prevalence of outliers. We break them up into two classes. Stragglers are tasks that take a long time to run, specifically more than 1.5x the median task. Recomputes are tasks that have to be rerun because their output is lost. This is a CDF. On the x-axis is the fraction of outliers. There are two lines, one for stragglers, one for recompute. what you see is that at least 50% of the maps in reduce phases have over 10% of their tasks straggling. Recomputes are much rarer. They only occur 2 or 3% of the phases. The next graph is similar, except it's plotting the outlier duration compared to the median task duration. 1x is where you would expect most of the mass to lie. And that's what happens with recomputes, the dashed line. Stragglers, however, are much more heavy-tailed. 10% of them end up taking 10 times as long as the median task. So what does this all cause the job to be impacted by? We ran our logs through a trace-driven simulator that mimics pretty much everything that we saw in the logs. The x-axis is the percent reduction in a job completion time. 0 means if you get rid of the outliers, there would be no impact. 100 means you'd get infinitesimally small time. You'll complete your job very fast. 50% is 2x improvement. There are 3 lines, one without recomputes, one without stragglers, and one without either of them. You see that despite being rarer, recomputes at median cause as much impact as stragglers do. The cumulative value add seems to be a direct addition. At higher percentiles, you see significantly more impact. 25% of your job time can be improved at least 50%. So let's start looking at the causes of these outliers and how MUN3 mitigates each one of those. The first cause is due to unavailable input. Tasks have to wait until their input now becomes recomputed. Suppose a reduce phase is feeding into a sort phase. Tasks are these little arrows, time goes downwards. By the time the sort task starts, if the reduce output is unavailable, it has to wait for the recompute. Even worse, for the map that leads into this reduce, if any one of those inputs are lost, the reduce will have to wait for the map to be regenerated to begin with. So the delay due to recomputes cascades. Our approach is quite simple. We want to replicate the intermediate data, and if the original is unavailable, we want to redirect the reader to the copy of the data. However, what data should you replicate? If you replicate everything, you're probably increasing your workload by twice as much and incurring more cost on yourself. And where would you want to replicate? Here are a few insights. We know that recomputes are rare. We find that they're also very localized. They happen on a few machines. They tend to be due to a combination of both disk loss rates and high load that causing unavailability. This lets us predict what the probability of recompute is at a machine, which leads into doing a cost-benefit trade-off between the cost to recompute and the cost to replicate. For a task, the cost to recompute is simply the probability that it needs to be recomputed times the time it takes, plus the recursive cost of recomputing the ancestors, if you will. Rack-wide failures we find are quite rare, or at least much rarer than a recompute. So we replicate within the rack. So the cost to replicate is just copying data over within the rack. So MUN3 compares the cost to recompute with the cost to replicate before doing this. One thing I'd like to highlight is we are preferentially replicating the more useful data. If you're on a flaky machine, your R2 is higher, so you replicate. If you have not replicated for a long time, then your recursive cost is much higher, so you go ahead and replicate. If you have a high fan-in, then any one of those guys will cause you to incur a higher loss, so you go replicate. Changing gears here a little bit, the second cause is that tasks, while reading their inputs, experience variable congestion on the network. Here's an illustration. Suppose you have 3 racks. We are focusing on the links in and out of the racks, because that's where oversubscription happens, that's where congestion happens. Suppose the map output is present like this in these 3 racks. Each reduce has to read 1 unit out of those individual colors. And suppose this is how you place your reduces. As you can easily see, there's a lot of data coming into the rack on the left, and these reduces take twice as much time to finish as reduce in the middle task. And these would be stragglers. The solution in this case is also implicit. Just spread them out evenly, leading to no hotspots. Let's step back a minute. There are many aspects of MapReduce that are already network aware. Shards are placed such that there are multiple shards within a rack and 1 shard outside the rack, so that losing 1 rack is not going to kill you. Tasks are placed close to where their inputs are to avail of data locality. The trick, though, is with a reduce, you have data present in so many racks and reduce needing it from so many inputs that no matter where you place it, you're not going to get any locality value. So today, everybody places reduce at the first available slot, which can easily lead to these asymmetries. Our approach, just like before, is quite simple. Let's place reduce tasks such that the traffic on each link is proportional to the available bandwidth on that link. The challenge is that there are many jobs running in the cluster, many phases within a job, and many tasks in there. How do you get global coordination to actually be able to get a smoother placement? It's also quite hard to track the utilization of every link at every time in the cluster, in a big cluster. Here's how we get past these challenges. I'll show you a local control where each job balances its own traffic. And if every job manager does the same thing, the global load smooths out. Here's what we do. Given the map output that is present in each rack and the available bandwidths on links in and out of the rack, we compute a max-min optimization that figures out that minimizes the maximum time to read data in and out of these links. The concern still is, how do you predict those available bandwidths? And here's a heuristic. If your phase is short, just use the bandwidths that you see at the start of the phase. They're likely to be a good predictor of what you'll see throughout. If your phase is long, just assume that all your links are going to have about the same bandwidths, because all you care about is the relative values between these links. A third cause is quite simple, though it impacts substantially many people. Tasks run for longer just because they have more work to do. A reason why this happens is because of unequal partitions. If you have just a few queues, a few keys, or one key that has a large amount of input mapping to it, the partition responsible for that key has a lot of work to do. Ignoring these tasks is better than duplicating them. If you just duplicated them, you wouldn't do anything. You would probably be counterproductive and eat away your own work, eat away your own time. What we do instead is we build an estimator of what the time for a task should be based on the data it's reading. Only if it's taking longer than it should do we act on it. In an ideal world, you would solve this problem to begin with. You'd say no, you'd divide work evenly between tasks. Well, this is not quite possible without getting into semantics. So what we do instead is leverage this theorem from 1970s. All we do is we schedule our work so that we don't get stuck with the task that has more to do towards the end, where there's not enough degree of parallelism. To wrap up, there's still some causes of outliers that are unattributable to each of these three major causes. They're likely due to contention at a machine. Rather than chase down all this long tail of causes, what we do is we try to copy the tasks elsewhere in the cluster. As long as the cause doesn't reoccur elsewhere in the cluster, we can get away with this. And if we are unlucky and this is not the case, we prune the copy and take the hit for a short time. We want to do this as early as possible, because letting an outlier run is only going to take away time and resource. However, you have a trade-off between using your resources to run new copies or do pending work. We build two predictors, one that at time now predicts how much time remains in a currently running task, and another, T new, that predicts what the time a potential new task would take to run. Here are a couple possibilities, and let's figure out when it's worthwhile to make a copy of them. The first possibility shown in yellow is clearly wrong. If you think you're going to take longer than what remains of the current task, there's no point in copying it over. The green one is a little bit more subtler. You're saving on time, but up until the green one completes, you don't really know which one of them will complete. There's a risk in killing the original copy. So you keep two copies on up until the green finishes, and you're using twice as many resources. The trick is you want to find a prediction value where your predicted time is less than half the remaining time, in which case you'll save both time and resources by going ahead and doing this. Otherwise, your resource cost is going to pull you back on other work that you would have done instead. This is precisely what we do. If you have pending work, you duplicate only if you save both time and resources. Otherwise, whenever you have an expected savings in time, you go ahead and do it. To summarize, there are four major causes of outliers, or at least breakdown of outliers, and I've shown you what Mantri does to mitigate them. Stepping back, here are some of the design principles that we kind of ran with. At any time, if you can predict what will happen to a task, you can leverage that prediction very nicely to act early, because things with stragglers and stuff, the earlier you do it, the better. However, you want to be aware of the resource cost of your action and also the opportunity cost of not doing anything. Sometimes it's best to not do anything. Of course, we'd act based on the causes. There's been a bunch of related work in task duplication and protecting intermediate data. Our key contributions, predicting to act early and doing resource and opportunity cost aware action, are the key differences from related work. Present two sets of results. The first is from our live deployment in Bing's production clusters. The second is from our trace-driven simulation that allows us to compare against other schemes. So Mantri has been running in production since May. It's a large, these results are from one single large production cluster, which is several tens of thousands of nodes. I'm going to show you results of 2 months with Mantri with a month of before Mantri ran. And I'm going to compare several hundred jobs that ran in production every day. They would do about the same amount of work over days. And we look at the average time before and average time after. The first graph has on the x-axis the percent reduction completion time. Zero means no improvement. Negative values means increase in time. And 50% means you're doing it in half the time. We see that the median improvement is 32%. The higher percentiles, we improve even more. The analogous graph shows you the usage of resources across jobs. The x-axis is same as before. Y-axis is same as before. X-axis is reduction in job resources. We see that at median, we get by without using any more resources. In fact, we even save resources for some jobs. How is it that we're improving faster, finishing faster without using more resources? It turns out most of the duplicates that Dryad was launching turn out to be either too late or too inaccurate. We are actually, there's a bug that's causing us to use slightly more resources, because it's kind of, when you schedule a duplicate, you really don't know when it'll start, so we were a little bit more aggressive with scheduling duplicates than we needed to be. The takeaway points are that Mantri issues fewer copies, half as many as Dryad. They're more accurate, up to thrice as likelier to beat the original than with Dryad. And we act much faster. 50% of our copies are issued before tasks finish 42% of their work. This next set of results is comparing Mantri with a host of alternate approaches. The axes are same as before, except the baseline is do nothing. An idealized scheme, as a common baseline, it's an idealized scheme that just plays with the tasks as they are. The takeaway point is that Mantri seems to both improve in completion time and resources compared to other schemes. Here's a better way of looking at that result. Suppose resource usage is less on the left and higher on the right, and job completion time is short at the bottom and more at the top. You want to be in the bottom left corner, because that's when you're benefiting in both. Do nothing is the origin. Here's how the schemes compare. All the alternate approaches seem to gain in completion time by spending more resources, whereas by being more predictive about which outliers are worthwhile to benefit from which action, Mantri gets significant time savings with fewer resources used. To conclude, I've shown you measurements from a production cluster that reinforce that outliers are a significant problem in MapReduce clusters. They happen due to a variety of causes, which are an interplay between storage, pulling data over the network, and MapReduce artifacts with unequal workload. I've presented a scheme that takes specific actions for each of those causes and accounts for the resource cost of an action before mitigating it. It significantly improved on prior art. Be happy to take questions.
Oh, I have a question. So it seems that you took as given the MapReduce interface and built this thing underneath it transparently. How would you approach the problem? So questions. Knowing what you know now about the causes of stragglers and the types of things you had to do, and assuming that you could go back and change the MapReduce interface, could you name the things that you could possibly do, or do you have ideas on what one could do there?
Sure. So the first thing, and this thing is already being done in production, is to provide better ways of partitioning maps so that the resultant partitions are more even than the current skew of them. So you would, rather than just doing a hash partition, you would kind of figure out what the individual sizes are and kind of balance that out better. That's one thing. I can probably come up with more, but yeah.
Going back, Chris Colahan from Google. Going back to last night's encouragement that we should be talking to the architecture guys, one of the assumptions you seem to make in this work is that when you replicate a work or if you re-execute on another machine, that machine had the same capabilities as the original. What would you do if your cluster was non-uniform and you had a couple of, I don't know, Crays sitting in the corner that could do map shards very fast, but not, you know, do so many of them?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. So I kind of hid that away from my... what we do have is very efficient cluster management software. It's called Autopilot. What it does is it kind of images machines up and it kind of puts watchdogs on them that kind of track machine behavior and stuff. So the primary reason we are not afflicted by persistent machine-induced problems is because this cluster management software kind of automatically quarantines out the really bad machines or the machines that need to be shot or need to be re-imaged. Having said that, what you then want from the cluster management software in a case where you have highly heterogeneous or very different skews of servers is a map that kind of says what a machine is equivalent in terms of non-equivalent, in terms of other machines. So the term people use is a slot. A slot is one concurrent task that can run. So a slot roughly matches to 1.5 cores, sizable amounts of memory, like 6 gigs or something. So the more machines you have, the more different machines you have, you can normalize for the variety of them by giving them different slot values.